Hello and welcome to the Incubator Podcast. This is your co-host, Sabir Saran.
And I'm Darren Boyd. And today we're talking to a startup that started in 2019, Strike Ready. And we're really excited to have them on the program. One, because they're addressing a need. They're defining a new market, security operations and management. It's the convergence of AI, data, automation to help defenders do more with their tools, to help defenders focus more on the exception, where their platform can handle more of the day-to-day operations. With us is Salim Scafuto, Global VP of Customer Success and Systems Engineering. He's a 20-year veteran in the space. We're really excited to have Salim on. Very eloquent speaker, knows this domain so well. So Salim, it's great to be talking to you again. What we'd love to do is I want to hand it over to you. Maybe you can give a little bit more on your background and then start to introduce Strike Ready as a platform, and then we'll just go from there.
So again, thank you very much for the invite. I really appreciate it. And thanks for the flattery on the intro. I think all I heard, of course, was my own age in that intro. 20 years is great. And then it's not so much. So, so I have I started my time in security in the military, in the U.S. Navy, then come out into the private practice, have worked about 12 years of those 20 in field work doing solution architecture deployments, a little incident response, and before I sort of spun into running product and engineering teams. I've worked for companies that you've probably heard of, Proofpoint, McAfee, Forcepoint, Komodo, and of course FireEye, where the primary founding team of Strike Ready spun out of. We're very much, I guess, is sort of incubated, if you will, as a team. And so we have a long, you know, a long history of all working together and executing together.
Awesome. Thanks, Salim. So, you know, I guess the main question is to kick us off here is what domain or problem area does Strike Ready actually set out to solve or and address?
A great question. So there's, I think, something around 2,000 cybersecurity companies. So saying that there's noise is the biggest understatement, I think, in our space. However, there's kind of three different ways from our view that you could really help. You can make a difference. You can make a difference with technology, detection, and so on. You can make a difference with process. So focusing on, you know, automation or GRC or something to that effect. And you can have an impact with the people. And we really felt that coming from a detection company, that really everyone has those kind of tools in place. That's not really where the biggest gap or opportunity for impact was. Rather, it was around the people, the defenders, the blue teams, the red teams, the purple teams who are responding and trying to look for holes, the vulnerability managers who are trying to prioritize what they should be proactively looking at. And really their experience was, I think, probably the biggest gap, trying to somehow manage the many, many technologies in their tech stack. I think we found on average about 40 to 60 vendors and then add more technologies atop of that. And we saw teams that were very much changing trend-wise, you know, going from an internal team trying to build, let's say, a SOC or security operations and modernizing that process, and then spinning out to MSSPs, finding that that wasn't exactly the right necessarily approach, and then coming back and adjusting a more of a hybrid model. We seem to see that being the trend where you get visibility and also leverage the expertise and labor, frankly, right from external teams. And that was something that's very difficult to do because it introduced new problems, right? Solution management, collaboration is a big problem. And then, of course, just scale. There's just so much to do. People that we tend to help are really suffering around, you know, these kind of core problems. So we felt like if we could create a seamless experience around these multi-vendor technologies, around the collaboration of these teams, whichever shape they may be, and integrate as well the customers' data wherever they may decide to have it today, yesterday or tomorrow, then we could really make a difference.
Okay. So just to build on that, Salim, make sure I capture this right. So certain aspects of course, collaboration across the security organization, SOC, vulnerability management, everything, bringing it to a degree of correlation or an aggregation to create an environment or a platform for action or automation thereof. Is that fair?
It is. Like there's a lot of effort around sort of visibility, right? There's a lot of projects around visibility, and primarily that's because those 2000 vendor technologies, they don't frankly integrate well with each other. Some of it is just a matter of technology. Some of it's a matter of competition, right? You have, they have shareholders, and if we understand, you know, they're all businesses they have to run. And sometimes that gets in the way of solving a customer's problem just by design. And so we took a novel approach and went realized that we needed to create a vendor neutral approach that said, look, what if we could help what if we can help an organization, no matter what technology they had, let it all function as if it was designed by a single vendor, and help them then to have workflows and process, built-in automation, as well as some autonomous capabilities, but make it seamless. Don't make it hard where they have to build it. It's not an empty box of Legos with no instructions. Rather, it's thoughtful. And make sure that there's some kind of a community value, because I think that, frankly, what we saw the most of is even in our time together at FireEye, and really not solved since, is everyone's trying to solve the same problems in their own silos. And we're suffering from a lot of the same problems. So if we could capture those common use cases across the market, then the community then, you know, would be able to help each other. And that's a really important part of what we are as a company and the solutions that we build.
Yeah, I think the industry is starving for that. It's such an important dynamic. We've seen, you know, going back to it, 2 years old, you've got something like 350 plus integration points across a whole series of integrations. So to your point, I get to leverage the investments I've made more intelligently and in concert with some intelligence layers on top, which is so important. But you said we're pulling in not only the integrations of underlying technologies, but we're also bringing in their workflows. We can interact and invoke some of their capabilities. And again, that's getting more out of those integrations. And it does look like a seamless package. But what I love on top of that is the people part of it. So great, I've got an estate. I can better leverage that estate, but you're also taking the burden off the talent and the talent shortage that we're seeing in this domain. Can you kind of start to piece some of this together in practical terms of what Strike Ready is? Because oftentimes I find I can describe it in different ways, but it does so much that it really depends who I'm talking to. So maybe you can help illuminate how you would describe the platform and
Sure, absolutely. So Strike Ready as a company, and then I'll kind of go into sort of who we tend to help, right? So who tends to use Strike Ready. Strike Ready as a company is a security operations and management platform, and it's very much an operational platform, not just some fancy visibility tool. So it's a steering wheel, not a windshield. But of course, you see the windshield better when you're holding the steering wheel. And when that technology is in the hands of a capable driver, which people in our field tend to be, everything simply operates better. Right. And it's a lot easier to when the machine functions more efficiently and more effectively as when it's designed, when it's purposefully designed, it's easier to attract capable talent with even lesser level of skills who can make an impact directly on risk management. And when you're reducing the burden, not just of the amount, the crazy amount of hats people in our field have to wear, but also the training of all these new folks that come in, it reduces the burnout. So it helps with that employee retention. And that's really critical because obviously, you know, as much as education and automation have helped with the skilled labor shortage, it's not really making much of a dent. It's unfortunately the gap's only getting bigger. And so our view is we need to lower the barrier of entry. We need to frankly make better, better tools for our defenders to use that are more accessible to even lower skilled people. And that's increasingly important in in the best of times economically, but even when there's a downturn, you have to make the best. You have to go to, as the saying goes, you have to go to war with the army you have, right? And the unfair playing field for defense and offense is adversaries only have to be right once, and we have to be right all the time. So we really want to make sure that we're empowering defenders in whatever capacity they are to do that job. From who uses Strike Ready, it tends to be really kind of four buckets, if you will. There's and this is a modular platform that is SaaS based and or SaaS managed, I should say, or cloud managed, and with a selective amount of a software footprint that's not endpoint based. And those folks tend to be the security operations team or the incident responder, so differ component of that. Threat intelligence analysts. So if an organization has threat intel team, very much can help them with threat intel management. Red teams. So being able to assess either on demand or continuously your controls as deployed and configured. You know, do I have what I need to have, and can I hunt for particular threat profiles? Maybe you've built. We have all of that built into the platform. And then lastly, it's being able to give vulnerability management teams or threat management teams a proper risk-based model that's not based on an arbitrary score or vendor-based concept, but rather the actual reality on the ground by bringing in the right external and internal information and prioritizing that for them. So, you know, that type of a platform that allows cross-collaborative workflows between these teams even really helps, you know, again, collaborate even when organizationally we may be separated because, you know, reporting structure or something or geography.
Yeah, so there's I love the way you position the steering wheel, the windshield, the relationship there. I warned everybody you were eloquent. To take that analogy further, you're also putting them in an autonomous car. You're pulling in all the sensor data, you're pulling in feeds, you're making decisions so that I only have to really correct in those exception scenarios. You've got a taxi client, you're pulling in all these threat feeds. We've seen you've got every ISAC, you've got all of this intelligence, you're pulling IOCs from endpoints. How does this all come together? And how does it come together with some of the concepts that I've seen in your platform? So you've got an ontology graph, you've got a attack and knowledge harvesting infrastructure, you've got Kara. How does this all help that driver decide when they need to correct and adjust the steering wheel versus what you can take on from a day-to-day burden?
Look, so yeah, there's the analogy of texting while driving, right? I think the stats are pretty obvious on that one. So if you're texting while driving, probably not going to be able to be regardless of your skill level, you may be an amazing driver, but if you're not looking where you need to be looking, you're not going to see the things you need to see. And that the platform in essence allows the technology to have a voice, right? In one direction. And then it allows the analyst to hear exactly what the technology is saying. So that way, you're looking where you need to look when you need to look there. So you mentioned, you know, the autonomous capability. If I continue to lean into vehicle automation analogy, right? Just like in that car, you have the ability for the mundane things, the lesser value things like staying in a lane and sitting in traffic, which no one really enjoys, I don't think. I love driving, I hate commuting, right? So there's a difference. And in that case, if you're looking at like incident response, you know, automated alert validation, data collection, knowing where an IOC is across all these different vendor technologies and tabs, you know, that's better given to the technology. And then informed or giving situation awareness to the analyst, who can then leverage what humans, frankly, still and probably will for some time do better, which is utilize their experience and intuition, insight and knowledge of the business requirements, right? You're not always going to make the same decision. So that type of built-in process is there. That way, analysts of whatever level and whatever skill, whatever role, are able to spend their time on things of more value, right? They're not wasting their time on things that are just a waste of their time. So for example, if you have something that's of interest, you know, by the time you engage in whatever that process is, things have really come back to you. So, you know, we have a habit in our field, we have gotten into a habit of pivoting, right? We're told, hey, pivot here and pivot there. And we've gotten very much into a tag wells, a tail wagging the dog situation, right? And unfortunately, that's not really good for that user experience. And since that's our focus, what we've done instead is created a reverse pivot model. So the technology is bringing the important things to you in a single view, in a streamlined process, and with the ability for you to very quickly and easily from a single place, be able to manage investigative actions, response actions, and even management actions. With, you mentioned the ontology, but we also have that, you know, that multi sort of three-dimensional chess type of reporting that actually gives you reporting of your risk in all of those different roles from a central location. And that's really powerful. And that's why we, for example, built that with a business intelligence engine, because that's really the consumer of that data, right? They have to understand, the business needs to understand the value of the team that you've invested in, the technology that you've invested in. And it's very hard, I think, for most teams to really communicate the cost center that is security, right? Hey, here's what you're getting from the amazing people and technology that we've invested in.
Yeah. Salim, if we take that windshield analogy a little bit further, so you're getting all this telemetry is coming in, you know, the whole visualization of from the driver's vantage point coming, hitting the windshield. So there's a certain degree, you got the integrations built in, others to be added in, et cetera. What is the intelligence that happens from that windshield to feed the driver the information to say, okay, I do need to turn or pivot in this direction and really focus in on this particular threat? You know, it could be the SOC analyst, it could be the threat hunter, which, depending on whichever team is working on it, and they could pick up the appropriate telemetry. But what's that intelligence translation that happens from the windshield to the driver? So there's the aggregation, the correlation, or what is that secret sauce there that allows people to focus in on exactly where they should direct?
I think if we continue leaning into that analogy, there's safety features that everyone has already sort of become accepted and become very comfortable with. In modern vehicles, I want to say from, you know, the mid 2010s until now. So lane departure, lane change warnings. My car gives me a little icon and shows me some coffee if it thinks I'm not paying attention to the road too much. I'm not looking through the actual windshield itself. And I don't know, maybe I squint too much or something, because sometimes it tells me even when I shouldn't. But these type of assistive capabilities is what we have built in. Right. It's I need help with sort of those are very streamlined processes that that you don't have to build out of the box. In StrikeReady's our worldview, you shouldn't ever have to build, for example, a manual playbook. Really, that's if you forgive us throwing vendors under the bus, we really feel like that's the vendor's responsibility. We should have been gathering as a means of our business structures, all of the different type of common use cases from everyone, and then putting that in there and then giving you the ability to sort of adjust that to your own team's sort of taste and style. But generally, it really should be in that. It should be in the platform, not just sort of here's a framework and here's the code base. You know, good luck with that or spend extra on, you know, sort of after the fact. And then there's more of a sort of a human led process, right? Then there's the other way around where it's like, okay, either in certain scenarios or when I'm comfortable, right, I want the machine to lead and then inform me, right? That's more of the full automation level. You know, if you want to think about like Tesla's sort of imposed, you know, five levels of automation, right, or of automation. You have the ability in StrikeReady, for example, to create workflows. And so let's say you take something like abuse mailbox, which oddly enough is something that's somehow still not solved today, and I think partly because there's humans involved, right? Whenever there's a human involved, it becomes more complicated. And when it's regular users, non-technical staff, employees of a company, there's some nuance. There's some, you know, some presentation that's needed. And we have, for example, everything from, you know, the phishing reporting buttons available like in Microsoft AppSource, all the way through the entire process. So a user, for example, could submit a phishing report, and there's interactions there on the user side, right? And then when that's received, there's all kinds of processes. So for example, we have 24 analysis engines pre-integrated and fully licensed in the platform. They have a quota and everything built in by default. And it's not just more is better. It's a specific composite to make sure that whatever types of attacks that are coming in, it has the right type of engines, because they're very use case specific generally, right? So more is not always better. And then of course, if someone wants to bring their own license, they can. And in that process, there's the ability to determine verdicts on those artifacts. So whatever has been submitted in that message, that's whole envelope stuff, and we can get into the details later. And then in that process, there's also enrichment that needs to happen. There's some nuance part of the detection process that can happen, reputation and so on. And that part happens in a fully automated way, as well as the other side, right? Notifying the end user, hey, thanks for submitting that. Right, we're doing all this user awareness training. We need to be giving carrots to, right, thanking them for doing that. There's notifications, sort of a middle ground, that hey, we found something bad. You may not want to interact yet, as well as full reports. Hey, thanks for submitting what you submitted, and here's what all the results are. And so, you know, really encouraging that the collaboration of the end user in good security best practices. That's all there, as well as case management. So that can be kicked off and sent only when there's something worthy of the analyst to look at. And that way, when the analyst clicks on a proactive email that comes to them and comes into the case management within the platform, they can see everything that's already been gathered, right? The machine has pulled all the correct telemetry out of the windshield and put it directly into their hands. So that the steering wheel, if you will, changes dynamically, depending on who's holding it, who's sitting in the chair, and what's in front of them through the windshield.
Wow. So Sabir and I often talk about socio-technical domains, and you're right, there's always an influence of human behavior. I think when we get into security, we have to look at even psychosocial behaviors. I love that Strike Ready understands that interaction and is feeding it appropriately, and like you said, allowing the human to lead the machine, and at times allowing the machine to lead the human. I think that's important. I also I want to make sure I understand one aspect of this, because on one hand I see that this works beautifully with, again, your existing estate. A lot of those endpoints, a lot of those sources feeding into you, you can leverage those in very intelligent ways. On the other hand, I look at it and say, this can replace a lot of technology. So it can augment, it perhaps can replace. I want to make sure I understand this part. Because the one that I can see the beautiful cooperative nature is pulling from some of those endpoints, pulling IOCs, interacting with those to say, hey, we have a workflow, we want to invoke your technology. Like you said, I don't need to create necessarily a lot of these playbooks. These vendors have the capability to do various activities. So that one seems very clear. The one that doesn't is, do I need any threat hunting capabilities? Or can I just look at Strike Ready and say, if you're already bringing all the feeds, right, everything's coming into your taxi client, you've got all of this AI that you've built into the platform, and you've got all this information feeding up from all my existing investments, is that enough for me to say, maybe I don't need external threat hunting tools, maybe I don't need some of these rules? I can leverage Strike Ready to be that engine and to do the threat hunting for me, period. Is that a fair statement, or is that not necessarily where you want to be characterized at this point?
No, I think that rather we're the intersect point between the different systems an organization has decided to use, right? So if you have a purple teaming platform and that's where you want to gather your reporting data from different systems, we're probably the best source of feeding that system, right? Because that's for the presentation layer, for example, right? If you want to run continuous validations of your security controls, then that's the aspect that you want to run with us. But I would say that really our approach, and then the way that we've executed on that approach is like this. We're really a lot of practitioners, and we didn't want to just sort of come with the typical, you know, vendor hubris and say, hey, we think we know, right, and just you should buy into my ideas. Rather, it's an analyst-based platform for analysts by analysts. And as a result, we've created over 350 integrations with over 140 different products in just shy of 2 years of our platform being GA. And that kind of execution is, I think I can use a word like unprecedented, and at least it certainly is in my experience. And the main reason is because the use cases and the way in which we integrate with technologies have been driven by practitioners in those four different groups that we're helping with. And the vendor neutral aspect of it, again, this is why we don't do detection, right? We integrate with your detection technologies. So if you're using like a SIEM or a SOAR or an XDR or whatever platforms, we're not dependent on them, but we can certainly augment and help you get more out of them, right? Because even if I have some strategic vendors, and which many organizations have, they'll have like an XDR company like a Palo Alto or a CrowdStrike or a SentinelOne, or they'll have a Fortinet, or they'll have, there's so many different vendors out there, right, that are sort of big. And their portfolio technologies will be well integrated. But then how do you get those to talk to each other in a way in which, as if they were designed? It's very difficult. And then the data nowadays, that's a whole nother challenge, right? So it's going from sort of internal to cloud, and then maybe from sort of SIEM formats to data formats. And so when you have a market that's very transitional like that, the defender, blue team or red team, they don't have a choice. They need to be successful at their job regardless. So we have native capabilities. And if you want to use ours, great. We're happy to continue to develop them for you. And if you want us to integrate with your existing technology where you've made your investment, even if only transitionary, right, between now and the next, and when you maybe you want to use ours later, that's all fine. We're neutral in that process. And we make sure that we're allowing you to make that choice. That's really our approach.
Would it be fair to say, Salim, like you mentioned earlier, all of these point-specific solutions out there have their secret sauce. They're doing it well, right? So they're surfacing up 80% of kind of the value of what's important for their specific domain, right? Well, the XDR and everything like that. But in order to make any of this stuff make sense of, this data point from this platform and that platform, it's that last mile or 20%. That depending on your role and function, you really need to know that Strike Ready allows you to not only configure, but then tailor, or I should say, to what's applicable to your organization, and that gives you the intelligence or the telemetry to then action upon it based on your role within the organization, whatever team you block on. So at least that context is what's most relevant for action appropriately. Is that all? Is that a fair way to characterize it?
I think so. I think so. And part of that is just a matter of scale, or it's a matter of, again, the competitive nature of the cybersecurity industry, right? By being neutral, mm-hmm. that gives us the opportunity to complete that mile, because it's not that it's not solvable. Sometimes it's decided not to be solved. Because that's not a company's go-to-market or their company's business focus or shareholder pressure, or, there's all kinds of things that come into running any business, right? So in being neutral like that, that allows us to, for example, take your alerts coming out of your EDR, fully ingest all the artifacts from that, be able to determine verdicts on them, enrich those, auto tag all of those. That way it's connected to everything. So it's automatically correlated, yeah. Tagged. And now you all of a sudden, it may match like a threat model that you've created. And maybe you have a threat model that says, here's what I actually care about. Anything, something happens, you should reach out proactively and let me know about that. So Akara, for example, our NLP driven AI can reach out proactively and let you know, hey, we saw something that matched your threat model. You should probably take a look at it, and do you want to do something about it? So again, it's very operationally driven, but if you're using different vendors, let's say I have to make the most out of my Microsoft license, and I have a EDR vendor, or I have to switch from one to the other, this becomes very disruptive in the ability to do the job. And it takes a long time. And then if you have any automation built in, like from your traditional sort of SOAR model, it's going to take months. It generally literally takes months to kind of re-get that all set up. We've created a platform that that makes that literally plug and play. And I highly invite anyone to challenge us on that, because it's a problem that's been around way too long. And we're really proud of sort of how we solved that. Integrating with that EDR, for example, let's say it's a, you know, like a, you know, whatever, any particular vendor, typically we'll set up through, let's say, an API, and we'll check some, create an API user on that platform, check a few boxes for permissions, and then copy over keys into the platform. And there's some configuration sort of in these integration cards. And then once that's done, it's done. Like the whole setup is done. And the reason for that is what was mentioned earlier, which is it's not just about the APIs talking. That's the easy part. It's what about the workflow? It's what about the playbooks? It's what about the reporting? It's what about everything else that an analyst has to do? It's a really hard problem to solve. And that right there is really what we're trying to solve, is the really the most difficult, hardest problem, is that last mile. And to do that, again, where it's driven by the market, driven by our customers. So far, we've had some, you know, some really good feedback. And when, by the way, when there's something missing, because there's always something that we haven't seen before, right? What we do is we take that user's feedback, or the customer's feedback on the use case, the technology they want to utilize, and the integration documents. And we sort of do it like an SI. We'll work together directly with that customer, and we build for them the integration. And we don't do that on like ProServe or something. Like we're building that directly for them, and we typically do that in like a 3 or 4 week SLA, and that allows us then to validate that the problem that we're intending to solve for them is actually solved, the technology works seamlessly, and everything else is really, you know, again, there's no sort of missing parts. So, you know, you can, like, if you're in that car, you could have the steering wheel in your hand, right? But if the steering goes out, having the steering wheel in your hand is not going to make much. You're just going to be freaking out, going, "Oh my God, I'm going to die!" Right? So you want to make sure that the steering wheel is connected to the steering column, whether it's physical or digital. That's depending on your car, right? But you want to make sure that everything is connected, because if even one piece is missing, it really kind of breaks everything else. So that type of comprehensive solution really requires you to build a platform and not a product. The majority of cybersecurity technologies tend to kind of come out and solve one problem or a part of a problem with a single product. And that's fine for pure play. Sometimes they're really amazing, but that doesn't give you comprehensive solutions. And this is where those gaps kind of come in, right? So you have to kind of decide from the beginning, you know what, we're going to go big. And we're going to sort of put all our chips in, and that's really essentially what we've done.
Yeah, I think you've touched on something that you're right, we've dealt with for a very long time, which is this interoperability challenge. But there's something else you said, which we're starting to see more and more now, which is we have a plurality of sources going to a plurality of destinations, and I don't think that changes. But in this transitionary period of, like you said, you may have something in a SIM format, you may have, you know, data constructs as well. How do we search? Where do we search? These pockets of security data lakes, operational data lakes, all of these pieces are starting to crop up. Whereas some products will say, hey, we have our own forensic lake, so send all of your data that you've already captured also to us so that we can analyze, et cetera. But you operate well at that interoperability play, but I think you also operate very well at this transitional state of what are we doing with our data and how can we optimize our search and analytics? I imagine I know the answer to this. Are you seeing, because I think the answer is most people are bringing you in for this interoperability challenge, but are you seeing more and more this complexity around this influx of data and federated search is interesting because I have more access to the data, but it's hard to bring the context. SIMs are really great from a context perspective, but they don't often have all of the pockets of data. Are you starting to see that more as a use case that people are interested in?
Very much so. And I think that's the trend. That's the trend is going in that direction where an organization needs to be able to have their data, whatever makes sense for their business. And it can't really be dictated by the vendor space. The vendor space needs to simply serve that purpose and solve that and provide a solution which follows the business need, right? I think that's probably true from a customer success perspective as a philosophy, but I think it's a trend we definitely see. So it's trying to get all the disparate sources of data into from internally, right, into a technology like a SIEM or a cloud-based data platform or wherever that data is going, which is there's definitely some trends we can talk about on that. But then also externally, there's all these different threat intelligence sources. People are using ISACs and they're using a premium threat intelligence. They're using community-based stuff. And there's some siloing on that side too, right? Because of the vendor space, right? So you have IOCs from vendor A not knowing about the IOCs from vendor B, but not really wanting to share it because they're afraid of sort of, you know, crosstalk. And at the end of the day, that doesn't leave the customer any safer. Everyone wants to know, and they're paying, frankly, a premium typically to know, hey, what do you know about so I can respond to it? And being able to provide federated threat intelligence across our own, from our own threat research team, which again, spun out with us from FireEye. So deep experience there when it comes to, you know, tracking campaigns and so on. We have over, I think about 1,100 what we call strikes. So these are curated campaigns that you can either leverage for research, for threat modeling, as well as for assessing your security posture using real like MITRE tactics and techniques and so on. So this helps, you know, with more of the red team side of things. But all that data, regardless of the source, it needs to come in and then be functional, be operational, and be correlated together. There's some situations, for example, like you take a ransomware, right? So if you take ransomware threat actors, they're oftentimes sitting on IP addresses in a bulletproof MSSP, right? And then for some of these, they're also sitting behind bulletproof borders, right? So you'll see that they get a little bit too much press, they go dark and they come up a couple months later, and then the vendors give them some cool new name because, you know, marketing, right? It's fun to call them animals or, you know, TAs or APTs or LMNOPs. But when, and that's all fine, it's certainly less boring, but what if it's the same threat actor from the same IP address that just recycled their IOCs again, right? We can't just live on things which have such a short shelf life. So for example, we use our own patented method for, let's say, attack simulation, right? Of being able to leverage that for testing your controls, because those have a much longer, the techniques and tactics that people use have more longevity. And that allows you to verify sort of where am I at any given time. And then that's automatically correlated with maybe alerts you may see internally, as well as data that you may have on your SIEM. As well as data you may have in your NDR on your network or in a data platform. You need to know that's being seen. And we even have like a history. Our history is essentially a time machine of any at the IOC level, right? That allows you to see any IOC and any analyst in your environment who's ever touched it, as long as you've been a strike ready customer. So it surfaces that, hey, that's that same ransomware actor who's targeting my region, my industry, my organization, my business cycles, right? My customers. And then you can apply the appropriate response, because just seeing them is not really enough. You also have to have some attribution. Our curated threat intelligence connects the dots between these different vendors. And again, as you mentioned, we even have the ability to search across them. So if you just want to know about, like, say, APT 28 or 29, right? There's an active, at this the time of the podcast, we have a war happening in Ukraine, right? And NATO countries and certain industries are being targeted, and there's certain threat actors you have to pay attention to. And we're notified by CISA and other organizations about this. So we can take a look at, hey, create a threat profile, for example, or utilize one of our default ones that are built-in ones, and identify, hey, this is actually an IP address, a domain, a URL or whatever that's attributed to a particular threat actor. Very important. You don't need legal level of attribution, but you need, you know, defender and red team, blue team level of attribution, right? And that allows you to apply the appropriate response and communicate to the business at the end of the day about what you saw, what you were able to do, with your team of technology and how that has helped a business, or when they need to disclose, when they need to, you know, how they need to build their risk management program. Because again, technology is part of that, right? There's also indemnification and other aspects of it. But this, you know, this really simplifies that whole process. Because we've taken a platform approach.
Yeah. Really compelling platform here, and products you guys have built here at Strike Ready. Salim, really looking forward to having some subsequent conversations from our listener base, potential clients. We're looking forward to engaging with them. So if anyone has questions for Strike Ready or ourselves, please don't hesitate to reach out. We hope that you found this discussion helpful. And Salim, we hope to have you back on the show in a future date as well.
We must have you back on, yeah. Salim. That's a must. Thank you, Salim.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.